to sing out with
Erwin Silva,
Barbara Dane,
and Harry Smith, world's greatest folklore authority.
Yes, indeedy. And
also, there was a big wino at this point. Your friends in Radio Land, so forgive me.
And Uncle Ike Robertson playing the Brilliancy medley. Country song. I met a man with a microphone, and oh, he did me wrong. He led me to a shady nook and put on a reel of tape and had my country ditty down before I could escape. To Tin Pan Alley he took my song, and there he happened to meet a publisher who cleaned it up and give the time a beat. And now it's on the hit parade, and now they pay a fee to that false young man with a microphone, and nobody thinks of me. So all ye pretty country girls who like to sport and play, be careful of your copyright. It's all they want today. And never trust a roving man, whoever he may be, if his hand is on the microphone and not upon your knee.
This, Aunt Barbara, where did you learn to sing?
See, I'll tell you, Harry.
Yeah.
Our music is truly a people's music created by all Americans. And we are learning the variety of this music and what stamps it as belonging to this land and this people. In this, the phonograph has been a potent factor. Many of these records were produced for the purpose of sale to one group, such as the shape note singers or the Arcadians, the rural dwellers, etc. Others were sold in localities where singers and tunes were of such sufficient popularity that the manufacturer took little risk in merchandising them. Let me point out that this rich heritage of the American people was not and is not available to the majority of Americans, especially those who live in metropolitan areas. When a well-known authority on this music first heard the collection, he said, And were these records actually put on sale in stores? Are they really from commercial pressings?
That was Henry Cowell.
The one logical way to produce an anthology of this kind is to make use of the recordings themselves. Because of the nature of the record industry, a given amount of records are issued of any one selection, and repressings are not made until a large reorder is received from dealers. The usual amount is 10,000 copies. However, record manufacturers have been known to repress 5,000 copies. Some of the records in this anthology had an original pressing of only 500 copies. As it does not pay to repress this type of music, produced to sell only to a limited audience, many of these records are collector's items. Ironically, in 1952, the record industry tried to legally freeze reissues by other companies, and the record company that instigated the legal action in this state, as the federal government wouldn't put through a bill to this effect, was the only English record company that sells and distributes its own products in the United States. The irony is that English folklorists come to this country to transcribe their music, as it is almost non-existent in England, and in this country, the English language, literature, culture is so pronounced. Well, I've been reading from the introductory notes to a record album series, The Anthology of American Folk Music, issued 13 years ago, and one of the genuine historic landmarks in the development of the appreciation of folk music in the United States today. This album was put out in 1952 by Folkways Records. The man who wrote what I was reading from was Moses Ash, the founder and director of the company. And what happened with the issuing of this set was, I believe, one of the most revolutionary changes that took place in the whole understanding of folk music and the way in which it could be utilized. First of all, it was revolutionary because he put out records that ostensibly he had no right to put out. In other words, a collection of recordings, most of these made in the 1920s, long out of print, and as he described, which were made primarily for sale and distribution on a local level.
Yes, and made in terms of private property laws.
Okay.
By the major recording labels.
And they were put out on the major labels, RCA, Victor, and Columbia, and their subsidiaries. And these records then went out of print. They were unavailable for over 20 years, and nobody dared to put them out again in any form because it wasn't their property. The theory behind this album was that the music was the property of the American people and that no record company had the right to sit on it and freeze it. The man who edited this whole series is named Harry Smith. That's who's sitting here in the studio with us tonight. And we thought that it would be interesting tonight to play songs from this historic anthology, talk about some of the reasons behind it, discuss some of the music or whatever we felt like, and hear from Harry about his relationship to the whole project. So with that as an introduction...
I would just like to say that Mr. Ash is a very bad person. Every time that I come in his office, he throws me out. And in fact, that last week he gave me a desk where I could sit up there so he'd know exactly where I was to be thrown out. And
that's knowing where it's at, right?
But
that's a symbiotic relationship, well, Harry.
Is that because of this anthology or is it for other reasons, Harry?
I've understood that if he was kind to people, that the place would be so crowded with folk singers that there wouldn't be any room for the bills and, or records or anything.
Yeah, true.
So
the money. There's no place to put the money.
No, I don't think there's too much money. I was only trying to make a joke there to let our friends in Radioland know that I've known Mr. Ash for a long time, and he really has dedicated his life to this sort of project.
Well, Harry, how did
I think this was the most elaborate thing he'd done up to that time.
I think so. Harry, how did you come to do this? Who initiated this project? Was it your idea or Moses? How did it work out?
Well, I had come here from San Francisco with a... I had a grant from the Solomon Guggenheim Foundation to make films. So, naturally, I wanted to come here and show them to them. And I'd shipped all my stuff. The heaviest portion of it was the phonograph records. So that the bill at the... and actually, I sent everything collect because I decided one afternoon, okay, I'll go to New York. So the bill piled up and up. You know, 1 month it's $235, and a week later it's like $285. And I finally got Pete Kaufman, who is a prominent collector of folk music records, to bail everything out. I'd been sleeping on his sofa. And however, to pay him back, which I never have to this day, but in other words, to get a hold of a few dollars, I started selling sort of duplicate records to Mr. Ash. And then one day, he, after I'd been coming in there perhaps for a month with boxes of records, he said to me, why don't you put some of this down? Why are you being so bad all the time? And so we did. That was it.
I see. One of the features of this set, Harry, is the extensive booklet of notes that goes along with it. It's a, I shouldn't say booklet, it's a book. And it's...
worth a dollar, says you.
Well, sold for a dollar.
Probably worth more.
Did you do all... Are these notes all yours?
Yeah, everything in there is mine.
Foot head notes or head footnotes, however, I don't know how to describe them.
No, the whole
works.
It took months to do that, and that's why it sells for a dollar.
I see.
That's why we...
I think it's the first book they sold also.
When I was a young folk nick about 15 years ago, I remember... When it came out, 13, whatever it was, you know. I remember people used to slip them out of the
I'd like to mention Marion Distler's name, who really did all the typing and so forth on.
Well, that's
things.
In the days when folkways consisted of Moash and Marion Distler.
That was all it was, yeah. There they were, and they'd work on it up until, like, maybe 10 in the evening. And
Let's. What would be some of your favorite selections? Let's pick out something just to play.
I have my favorite picked out. May we? Could we play the one about... Oh, well, they're all my favorite. But can we hear about the history of good old Charles Jeteau?
Yeah, that's a beautiful, beautiful assassination record.
Christians, wherever you may be, and likewise pay attention from these few lines from me. I was down at the depot to make my getaway, and providence being against me, it proved to be too late. I tried to play off insane, but found it would not do. The people all against me, it proved to make no show. Judge Coffey passed the sentence, the clerk he wrote it down. On the 30th day of June to die I was condemned. My name is Charles Jeteau, my name I'll never deny, to leave my aged parents to sorrow and to die. But little did I think, while in my youthful bloom, I'd be carried to the scaffold to meet my fatal doom. My sister came in prison to bid her last farewell. She threw her arms around me, she wept most bitterly. She said, my loving brother, today you must die for the murder of James A. Garfield upon the scaffold high. My name is Charles Jeteau, my name I'll never deny, to leave my aged parents to sorrow and to die. But little did I think, while in my youthful bloom, I'd be carried to the scaffold to meet my fatal doom. Now I mount the scaffold to bid you all adieu. The hangman now is waiting, it's a quarter after two. The black gout is o'er my face, no longer can I see. But when I'm dead and buried, dear Lord, remember me. My name is Charles Jeteau, my name I'll never deny, to leave my aged parents in sorrow and to die. But little did I think, while in my youthful bloom, I'd be carried to the scaffold to meet my fatal doom.
I guess the problem is still with us. Harry, on what basis were the... You started out, you said, with hundreds, thousands of records. On what basis did you make the selection for material to go into the anthology?
Well, sorry, friends in Radio Land. I say, because that's the editor is Sing Out over there.
Right?
He's a very formidable person. He's a big, big folklore authority. And more or less that the recording had to be well made and that it was interesting and that it would add up to so many sides per record, I think is about it. There are many wonderful records that had been recorded by mechanical means before the electric recordings came in. In fact, probably the best ones. But as far as these were concerned, they all had to be clear electric recordings. And I included all the good versions of child ballads that I was able to locate. Not that they're nearly as good as the ones that Dr. Bronson edited for the Library of Congress, for example. But for commercial records, I tried to get all the child ballads and then some of the important later ballads.
Well, to me,
so on and so forth.
That's always been one of the most fascinating aspects of this anthology. It was one of the things that was a revelation to me. You know, growing up in getting interested in folk music with a capital F and a capital M in New York City, where you start out by believing folk songs is what Burl Ives sings, or Pete Seeger sings, which is just a step on the way to finding out what it's about. I guess I had a typical big city contempt for...
Now listen, Irwin, what is this? Pete Seeger is no longer with Folkways? Why are you...
Well,
I'm not putting Pete down, you know that.
People
but
such
it's a different thing, that's all.
People such as Pete and Burl Ives served as a bridge, an introduction, and a doorway, but then once you got inside the door, you know, there was the anthology. That was the next step. If
Pete
you were
does
lucky.
Is on a whole different level, and it's good. It's, you know, I love it. But it's not the same thing. I don't have to convince you of that, do I? And
He's a wonderful banjo player. I like him.
It was interesting to hear in this anthology versions of child ballads, which had been filtered through more than just an oral tradition, as in some of the recordings from the Southern Appalachians, but were the musician's conception of what would have some commercial appeal, even right in their own neighborhood. And it takes on a whole different character. In some ways, it's much more valid than... a child ballad still being sung the way it may have been sung 300 years ago and nobody could care less except as a folklore study. But in terms of emotional communication, what the heck does that mean?
I agree, because I think that what you find on these records is something that reflects what are the term they use, contemporary community standards. You know, what the people were singing to each other probably and what they felt that and their neighbors were digging.
In fact, this number 10 in that series, Willie Moore, by, forget who it's by, it's on the list there.
Burnett and Rutherford. Says.
Dr. Bertrand H. Bronson, who I mentioned before, because he once hired me to mow his lawn, or rather Mrs. Stern did, and Dr. Bronson, if you're listening to us.
This is all Berkeley talk.
I'm sure it is, yeah. Well, he probably remembers me as living in the basement there. Thought that might be a very ancient ballad. The only place that song occurs is on that one phonograph record. It has never been printed.
You mean it's not a child ballad, but it should have been?
Probably actually is. Well, about that age. It may be about
1700. Before we play it, and this is number 10, one of the great things about this anthology is Harry's capsule descriptions of the plot of each album. For instance, this one, Willie Moore, the description of the plot is Annie on the grassy mound after parents Nick's marriage to King. Death probably self-inflicted.
You weren't working for Hearst Press then or
no,
anything.
No, I was trying to make imitation newspaper headlines.
No, it was great.
It's a guess. Okay, Willie Moore.
Willie Moore was a king, he's age 21. He courted a damsel fair. Four eyes were as bright as a diamond after night, and a wavy black was her hair. He courted her both night and day, till a marry they did agree. But when he came to get her parents' consent, they said it could never be. threw herself in Willie Moore's arms as all time had done before. But little did he think when they parted that night, sweet Anna, he would see no more. It was about the 10th of May, the time I remember well. That very same night her body disappeared in the way no tongue could tell. Sweet Annie was loved far and near, had friends most all around. And in the little brook before the cottage door, the body of sweet Annie was found. She was taken by her weeping friends and carried to her parents' room. And there she was dressed in a shroud of snowy white and laid in a lowly tomb. Her parents now were left alone, one mourn and the other weep. And in a grassy mound before the cottage door, the body of sweet Anna still sleeps. This song was composed in the flowery west by a man you may never have seen. Oh, I tell you his name, but it is not in full. His initials are J.R.D.
Well, listen, I one of the things that I've always dug, we're talking about the child ballads in these new kind of versions. This is the first time I ever heard Clarence Ashley, for instance. Now, Clarence Ashley, here he is. It's interesting. A lot of the guys who sang on this series are making a comeback today. Clarence Ashley, Doc Boggs, Furry Lewis, all of a sudden they've been rediscovered.
And gee whiz, they didn't even know they were singing on this series.
That's
when
right.
They did it.
Yeah, there's a issue of the Little Sandy Review. What's that man? Who's the name of the man that issues the Little Sandy Review?
Paul Nelson.
Yeah, I'd like to put in a good word for him, too.
Is that the good word?
That's the good word.
Is it enough?
Paul Nelson is
okay.
A good word.
Paul Nelson is a good word. Now, this one of Clarence Ashley's, The House Comet, the first time I heard it was. You probably remember Richard Dyer Bennett singing.
My hound. No, you guys. He says a much more nicer voice.
Well, whatever
I
it is. I mean, we're not trying to put Richard Dyer Bennett down. He's got his thing.
Hey, let's try to put Richard Dyer Bennett down.
There is Clarence Ashley.
Well, Mitt said a note to love. Well, Mitt said he. I'm just returning from the salt sea, and it's all for the love of thee. Come in, my old true love, and have a seat with me. It's been 3/4 of a long, long year since together we have been. Well, I can't come in or I can't sit down, for I haven't but a moment's time. They say you're married to a house carpenter and your heart will never be mine. That's I could have married a king's daughter, dear. I'm sure she'd have married me. But I've forsaken her crowns of gold, and it's all for the love of thee. Now will you forsake your house, carpenter, and go along with me? I'll take you where the grass grows green on the banks of the deep blue sea. She picked up her little babe and kisses gave it three. Says, stay right here, my darling little babe, and keep your papa company. Well, he hadn't been on ship but about 2 weeks. I'm sure it was not three. Till his true love began to weep and mourn, and he weep most bitterly. Says, are you a-weeping for my silver armor-gold? Says, are you a-weeping for my store? Are you weeping for that house carpenter whose face you'll never see anymore? No, it's I'm not a-weeping for your silver armor-gold, or neither for your store. I am weeping for my darling little babe whose face I'll never see anymore. Well, he hadn't been on ship but about 3 weeks. I'm sure it was not four. Till he sprung a leak in the bottom of the ship and it's something for to rise no more.
And if I know I've been talking a lot, but maybe you would give me one more.
That's right, you talk
favorite.
Pretty. Oh, of mine? Could we play? You know what I like?
Right. You go ahead.
And I don't know anything.
We haven't
about...
let Harry vote yet, but that's. Oh, yeah, he did
vote.
Oh,
well,
for
he
one.
Voted when he picked the whole collection, man. Didn't
okay.
He?
Well, I would like to say to any teenagers in the audience that if you can kill the president, I would can get somebody to write a song about you.
You're immortal. You can get someone to.
Yeah, I have somebody. I won't tell you who they are.
Oh, you have a little old lady locked in an attic somewhere.
From Pasadena.
This is Harry Smith's conscious outrageousness, right?
All right. Now, were you talking about a particular song in here that you want to do now, another one of your...
Well, we already did Child's Guitar.
Yeah, I know you did, but isn't there another... Isn't Mr. Garfield in here or anything?
Yeah, there is another one in there. And, of course, the Library of Congress puts a record out on that subject, which is why I happened to mention it.
Well, listen, look for it, Harry, because I wanted to tell about one of the most fascinating songs I ever heard, learned from this anthology.
Good, and later I get to pick another one.
Yeah, right. Let me read Harry's description. Technological unemployment hits shoe industry in the year of 18 and 4.
Oh, that's a pretty
right. Isn't that a great
yeah.
one? Now, here is to I've never seen as successfully a song dealing with an economic subject. And I've listened to every union song and labor song and, you know, all those kind of things. But to get a summing up of the Industrial Revolution and automation, there's just nothing to beat it.
Pete Seeger sings that now.
And not on this album, yeah. That was the Carolina... Oh, yeah, right. That was the Carolina Tar Heels.
Well, the one that I was thinking about before, I'm very partial to one that's called The Fish and Blues. What do you know about that? I don't know anything about it.
I'm a-going fishing,
I'm a-going fishing, too.
Yeah, I just recorded Holy Modal Rounders singing that.
Do they
the
do
Folkways.
What do you mean for Folkways? They don't...
Yeah, they are. They're now made record for Folkways.
Who's
last
Henry
week.
Thomas who made this record that you use?
I really don't know. One of these... because, of course, I haven't been interested in these subjects for many years. I came to New York to study the Kabbalah, or rather, I came here to make a movie of Thelonious Monk, but I fell in with...
And what went wrong?
What went wrong? The day I got here, I met someone who sent me to a place called the Home of the Sages of Israel, where a lot of old men, like 80 and 90 years old, threw handkerchiefs on the floor around a model of the Tree of Life and danced on them. So I devoted about 10 years to that particular subject. And
sounds like the folk music of New York City, right?
They sang beautiful songs about Shemin Bayachai, who is supposed to have written the Zohar, and long ballads of various sorts. And, you know, they...
And this distracted you from Thelonious Monk?
Not really, no. Thelonious and I got to be
I realize
good
I'm not
later.
Supposed to follow the train of this thought, but I have this habit. Anyway, we were talking about fishing blues,
fishing
right?
Fishing blues, that was a big occupation around my house at one time, and I really enjoy that song.
Fishing blues?
Went up on the hill about 12 o'clock, reached right back and got me a pole. Went to the hard ones, got me a hook.
Sound like a little 10-cent plastic whistle from the dime store.
Probably did. The pitch is very accurate, and so it must be almost.
Yeah.
But I think that Ralph Rinsler or somebody has discovered Henry Thomas again, haven't they?
Well, if anybody has discovered Henry Thomas again, it's undoubtedly Ralph Rinsler.
Or John Cohen, I don't know. Anyway, what were you saying about the recording industry at that time while the record was on there, Harry?
Well, I was asking Irwin and Barbara if it was all right to say the word Negro on the air, because it's peculiar, these racial classifications.
Well, listen, BAI is a non-profit, just be careful.
Yeah, no, they're a bunch of communists, but the thing is that all
which
those,
we're going to prove next week, those, I think, or the week after.
One of these weeks.
Long ago, my teacher of physical anthropology, Wilton Krogman, had pointed out that all of these things like sort of racial designations are really due to conditioned reflexes, that the only reason that, say, Indians or Chinese or Negroes or anything exists is because the brain has become conditioned to pick up certain features and use them as the cues to recognition of types. So I was just asking Barbara and... Irwin, which is a much better way than saying Irwin and Barbara. If it's all right to use the word Negro on there.
Alternate.
Hmm?
Yeah, but what would you say about how they designated the records or didn't?
Well,
they didn't. That's the point.
I think that in most preceding series that the racial background of the recordees had been rather carefully stipulated. That was
the
thing.
On the catalogs, they always did, sure.
Sure, and that was the, I think that, more than anything else, that was the, to me, the interesting thing about this series was that that was not done. So it proved a sort of an interesting psychological test for all of these people who claimed that they were able to decide that this record was made by such and such, that I collected a number of catalogs that have been annotated by, you know, Mr. X and Mr. X and Mr. Y and Mr. Z, who are famous authorities on those subjects, and they really didn't know. Funny thing is that nobody was able to, for example, Mississippi John Hurt, really no one was able to decide what he was.
Is Mississippi sure. John Hurt in the anthology?
Sure, that's the first place his records were reissued, along with a great number of other people like Doc Boggs and Buell Kazee and I think there was one record of Blind Lemon.
Oh yeah, I see Mississippi John Hurt, the Spike Driver Blues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got tossed out.
Listed here as number 80 on the thing.
There's a couple of his records in here. That's a good one, Spike Driver Blues. Why don't we?
Yeah, I like that very much.
Play that in honor of Andy Warhol.
Well,
play it, and while you're listening to it, just think in your own mind whether it makes any difference where he fell in the catalog.
Take this hammer and cast to my captain. Tell him I'm gone. Tell him I'm gone. Tell him I'm gone. Take this hammer and cast to my captain. Tell him I'm gone. Just tell him I'm gone. I'm sure he's gone. This is a hammer that killed Johnny Ray, but it won't kill me, but it won't kill me, but it won't kill me. This is a hammer that killed John Henry, but it won't kill me, but it won't kill me, ain't gonna kill me. A long ways from East Colorado, honey, to my home, honey, to my home, honey, to my home. It's a long ways to East Colorado, honey, to my home, honey, to my home. That's why I'm gone. Henry, he left his hammer laying inside the road, laying inside the road, laying inside the road. John Henry, he left his hammer all over in red. All over in red, that's why I'm gone. John Henry's a steel driving boy, but he went down, but he went down, but he went down. John Henry, a steel driving boy, but he went down, but he went down. That's why I'm gone.
And that counts for the discovery of Mississippi John Hurt, more or less, doesn't it?
Really? Yahoo!
Yippee!
Well,
sure.
Listen,
as Harry Stamfel would say,
one has to explain to your favorite Radioland audience that the price you exacted from us for appearing on tonight's program was the right to give your acknowledgments to various and assorted friends and associates who have contributed to your present state of being.
Yes, and if
so
there
go
are,
ahead.
If there are any friends in Radioland who have money of any amount, you may contact me through Folkways.
Okay. For any purpose. Harry Smith is currently one of the country's leading outrageous filmmakers, in case you're interested in outrageous filmmaking.
Aren't I'm you? Only interested in outrageous films, not in outrageous filmmaking.
Well, I am embarking on a very elaborate project now that I don't know whether there's any of our friends in Radioland that have ever looked at movies.
Some of them also have eyes besides ears, you know.
But
so, go ahead.
Like Andy Warhol and Jack Smith and Robert Frank, William Burroughs and Ed Sanders, so forth, you know, or making a movie with
actually what he's doing, he has a telephone book open and he's just reading names.
Yeah, they are names, they're names, they're names, names, names. But I would like to point out that where I discovered Aunt Barbara Dane was in the, strangely enough, due to the population explosion, we don't have to go to the Appalachians anymore, like Cecil Sharp or something. I went to the Folklore Center. And
the best field recording in the world is done at the Folklore
Center. And I was talking to Izzy Young, and suddenly the Aunt Barbara and her manager...
Who may your manager be? You ever heard that phrase?
Yeah, who may your
listen, be. Let's get off that subject and play John the Revelator. That's a guess.
Well, the reason I asked about John the Revelator is it's one of these songs, Harry, that's always confounded me. I could not, I tried and tried and tried to get all the words. I assigned 12 different people to try and get all the words so we could print it sometime and sing out, and nobody has succeeded. Now,
you never asked me.
I don't mean to John the Revelator, but I mean to John the Revelator as sung on this particular recording.
I know.
Okay.
I'm the best.
Listen, make up a prize now we can offer to anybody who's listening.
All right.
Okay?
Good.
A free copy of the latest Sing Out.
A free subscription to Sing Out to anybody. Now, I mean this. This show is a big put on except for this genuine 100% gift offer. A free subscription to Sing Out to anybody who successfully notates the words to John the Revelator that we're going to play now.
Notes, not notates.
Whatever he does.
Notate is a musical thing.
Well, okay, but just get us the words, okay?
We need the words. And as a matter of fact, you know you're talking about Blind Willie Johnson, right?
Right.
The singer on this record is Blind Willie Johnson.
Right.
I would, and I just got through claiming that I was the greatest, you know, record listener to word getter offer recorder that exists. And I tell you, on the question of...
You already have a subscription to
On
Sing
the
Out.
Question of Blind Willie Johnson, I resign. I my skills are no longer... So in other words, if you can do it, I'll also... Let's see, what'll I do? I'll give you a free autographed picture of Harry Smith.
I would suspect that Blind Willie Johnson already has a subscription to Sing Out, though.
Well, who's that riding? Who's that
riding? John the Revelator.
Who's that riding?
John the Revelator.
Hey, book of the seven, tell me what's John a riding?
Master Revelator.
What's John a riding?
Master Revelator.
What's John a riding?
Master Revelator.
Hey, book of the seven. Father, who are why they? Does cry the holy? Bound and fold, son of our God, daughter of Zion, Judith the Lion, he redeemed the saint about us with his blood. Tell me who's that riding?
John the Revelator.
Who's that riding?
John the Revelator.
Who's that riding?
John the Revelator.
Hey, book of the seven. Well, what's John a riding?
Master Revelator.
What's John a riding?
Master Revelator.
What's John a riding?
Master Revelator.
Hey, book of the seven seals. I'll the Revelator, great advocator, cast them on the Fatima's eye. For telling the story, rising in glory, cried, Lord, who's the love of Samaya? Tell me who's that riding?
John the Revelator.
Who's that riding?
John the Revelator.
Who's that riding?
John the Revelator.
Hey, book of the seven. Well, what's gonna ride in?
Master Revelator.
What's gonna ride in?
Master Revelator.
What's gonna ride in?
Master Revelator.
Hey, book of the seven seals. Well, Moses to Moses, watching the flock, saw the bush where they had to stop. God told Moses, pull off his shoes, out of the flock, go where you are choose. Now tell me, who's that riding?
John the Revelator.
Who's that riding?
John the Revelator.
Who's that riding?
John the Revelator.
Hey, book of the seven. Well, what's John the riding?
Master Revelator.
What's John the riding?
Master Revelator.
What's John the riding?
Master Revelator.
Hey, book of the seven seals. Well, who are worthy? Else cried a holy, bound and fold the son of our God, daughter of Zion, Judah the lion, he redeemed us and he bought us with his blood. Tell me, who's that riding?
John the Revelator.
Who's that riding?
John the Revelator.
Who's that riding?
John the Revelator.
Hey, book of the seven seals.
John the Revelator, sung by Blind Willie Johnson. We repeat once again our once-in-a-lifetime offer, a free subscription to Sing Out for the first person to write out the words as sung and send them in to us.
Okay, here's the words. Now, where's my Sing Out?
Okay. Leave your name with the girl at the front desk and don't call us, we'll call you.
Hey, why don't you play this number 61, James Alley Blues, because, you know, by Richard Rabbit Brown. It became a joke in New Orleans, according to Louis Demain. I don't know whether anybody knows about Louis Demain. He was a trumpet player with Buddy Bolden's band and so forth. But he told me that Richard Rabbit Brown, that a specialized thing developed, which was called Running Rabbit, see, because poor Richard Rabbit would be he'd be drunk singing in the middle of the night, and everybody would throw water on him. And it became quite a thing to see who could make him run the farthest. Ooh. He must have been quite a character. That record was made in a garage in New Orleans.
Some of the best music.
He only made those two sides, which this is one, and then another version, one which is a vocal version of Tiger Rag, and a 12-inch record, strangely enough, one side of which has the sinking of the Titanic. "'Twas on..." I know that whole song. I won't sing it.
Sing it.
I can't remember it.
Sometime we'll have
an
you
April
on
April morning in the year of 1902.
Do you know, ever since I heard that line in that song, in the song we're going to play right next, I've been looking for a cat to offer me some You Need a Biscuits and Half a Pint of Gin, but nobody made such a concrete offer yet.
Well, I would love to play the guitar like he does. He's as good as Thelonious Monk in his own way.
Nothing like it used to be. And I'm telling you all the truth. Oh, take it for me. I done seen better days, but I'm putting up with these. I done seen better days, but I'm putting up with these. I could have a much better time with these girls. Now it's so hard to please. Cause I was born in the country, and I needed to rule. Cause I was born in the country, she thinks I'm easy to rule. She tried to hitch me to a wagon, she wanna drive me like a mule. You know, I bought the groceries, and I paid the rent. Yeah, I buy the groceries. And I paid the rent. She tried to make me wash her clothes, but I got good common sense. said, if you don't want me, why don't you tell me so? You know that if you don't want me, why don't you tell me so? Because it ain't like a man that ain't got nowhere to go. I didn't give you sugar for sugar, let you get salt for salt. I'll give you sugar for sugar, let you get salt for salt. And if you can't get along with me, well, it's your own fault. How you want me to love you and you treat me mean? How do you want me to love you? You keep on treating me mean. You're my daily thought and my nightly dream. Sometimes I think that you're too sweet to die. Sometimes I think that you're too sweet to die. And another time I think you ought to be buried alive.
Ooh, that's tough sayings. Tell us about, you were talking about Rabbit.
Rabbit? Tell me, Aunt Barbara, do you know another song like one of the child ballads that you could sing for us as a sort of a closing?
Don't you like the way Harry moved in here? Took over the. This is the Harry Smith show.
Right. Yeah.
Then there's two guests, Bob and Dan and Irwin Silva.
Barbara never gets to do anything, though. Don't you do like Barbara?
That's the whole idea.
I tell you, one of these fine days, I'm going to start singing on this show. I don't know what it is with me. But the thing is, I like to hear people sing all the time. And when I sing myself, I can't hear it. I'm inside my head, so. I'd rather, well, that's
don't
a whole other...
Don't you know a protest
other...
song against WBAI?
I'm like, going to write one.
Listen. The elevator is small and the engineer is good. Sing out is the one that should be understood.
It's a good beginning, Harry. It's a good beginning. Can I get the copyright on that song?
We've got a very limited amount of time left, so let me recapitulate. We've been talking with Harry Smith, who is very hairy. I don't know about how smithy. He's also the person who had the perspicacity to put together a rather completely...
That was many, 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 many years ago, you see, because I devote most of my time these days to being interviewed on the radio.
That's right, I know, Harry.
And to my study
so
of Ashanti Goldthwait.
Schedule is really appalling. But he beat everybody out. So he put out this completely uncensored, you know, as far as, I mean, he just used his own taste as the only guideline. What did he like, you know?
I have a very bad voice. Actually, I'm a very nice person, see, but my voice is against me now.
Well,
one of the great things about the anthology, of course, is, as you said, the tremendous variety of material. There are many areas we didn't cover, but one in particular...
America.
Might be a good America, yes.
Yeah, it's a beautiful... I love it. I would hate to see anything happen to it, and they better stay out of it now. They're going to have a bad thing happen to them.
Now, we're going to wind up with a Cajun... mad Cajun dance tune, because this within these six records, there is the whole... Really, the whole world of music. I could... If I had to throw everything else in my collection away, I think if I kept these six records, I could be quite content. I was, for a number of years, quite content with just these six records. And
before we play it, though...
But I
now you tell me, Harry, is the title of the song and the artist name are put on?
Where?
On this here. It's number
37.
You mean Folkways
Blues?
No.
Well, you can say that in a minute, but the first thing, I have to make an announcement, which I've been trying to build up to here, and you won't let me get at it.
All right, go ahead.
We have, besides our famous contest for the words of the song that we announced a few minutes ago, we have a new concept to announce, and we want you to pick up on this and tell your friends and your children and your enemies or whoever. We're going to accept the submission of tapes of tunes written by yourself and sung by yourself. We will listen to the tapes and pick every week one best one, best, better, good, decent, something, anything that's valid that we think we ought to play. We'll pick one Arbitrarily.
Anyway, send us your original song. Sing them yourself. Send it on some kind of a tape that we can play over the radio. And at the end of the year, we'll announce a big once-a-year contest, and we'll give away WBAI to whoever wrote the best song, right?
Chris Albertson we're giving away.
Okay. To wind up the anthology, number 37, it's spelled S-A-U-T-C-R-A-P-A-U-D.
That's Sauteed Frog Legs,
South
right?
South Crapo, and it's performed by Columbus Frug.
Capitol, il est rose, ma soeur, la fille à maman.